Jaspreet Boparai and Don Nicholson with Greenwashed on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
The editorial in Spectator Australia Sunday said Donald Trump's victory will change the fate of the world and shake up the other leadership who predominantly left-wing politicians have spent the last few years sneering and saying regrettable things about the man who is about to be in charge of their security. There's been a long line of congratulatory comments, most of which have included uncharacteristic groveling. It's lucky for them that Trump has a history of pragmatism and forgiveness. Now, to make sure that that's sort of got some merit, we have back on RCR Greenwash today, Thomas J. Shepstone of Energy Security and Freedom, Substack, and a resident of Honsdale in Pennsylvania. So welcome to our show again, Tom, and thanks for coming on at short notice. We're very grateful.
Sure.
What do you make of that editorial from The Spectator?
Well, I realize the tone in which he delivered it was annoying, but you know what he said is correct. What's happening, I noticed just before I came on with you that Ursula von der Leyen, the head of the EU, just announced she's told Trump she's ready to buy LNG from us, more LNG. So call it groveling or call it pragmatic behavior or call it just practicality. But the fact of the matter is Trump is a leader. He clearly makes an imprint on the entire globe. He's an unusual person. He is a forgiving person. There's no question about that. I mean, that's his nature, and it always has been. And if you look at the 2016 election, you know, he called Ted Cruz a lying Ted, and he and Marco get into all kinds of accusations, Marco Rubio, with one another. And now they're all you know, together closer than you can possibly imagine, because Trump is a forgiving person. And of course, they're wise enough to be forgiving as well, because in politics, you can't have permanent enemies. You know, you just can't if you want to be successful over the long term. So I think Trump has ran a magnificent campaign. I guess you asked me before we started the program, what kinds of things that I want to bring out. And I think the most important thing is that Trump has forged a new type of Republican Party. There's been a transition, there's no question about it, transformation, a realignment, whatever term you want to make. I mean, look at how the campaign ended up with Bobby Kennedy Jr. on the team, speaking forcefully for Trump, even though they disagree on obviously certain things, but recognizing the free speech is so important, health issues, after the COVID debacle. So he's got his priorities straight. He says, look, free speech is more important than my Democrat politics and health issues and the destruction of our country by Big Pharma during the last 4 years was a terrible thing. So he came along. I watched I think 3 days ago or so, maybe it was more than that, but there was an interview Joe Rogan did with Elon Musk. And it's hard for me to believe, to be honest with you, that Elon Musk came on board because I heavily criticized him, you know, 5-6 years ago for his Solar City corporatism project, and Tesla, of course, is corporatism. But the man is a genius, there's no question about it. And he too, and Rogan. The two of them, what they said to each other is, I can't believe that the two of us, who were very liberal, voted Democratic, and considered ourselves part of the left, have realized we need to be with Trump. You know, and it's such an astounding thing. And it's not just them. We saw that Trump took much bigger proportions of Black men, Latinos. I don't like that term, but
I understand where you're going from. But
that group and he took young people. He also did well with all the talk about abortion and all that. He did well with women. He really brought everyone together in his own unique way, and that's the only way to put it. He's an unusual person. He's very pragmatic, and sometimes too pragmatic, perhaps. But he knows how to get things done. If you look back, you know, one of his famous episodes in his life was when he watched the ice skating rink in New York City from an upper floor office and saw that New York City was taking 11 years to repair and put back in service an ice skating rink. He finally called Mayor Koch at that time and said, "Will you let me just do it?" And so he did. And of course, Koch didn't think he would be able to do it. And he got it done in like 6 months, you know, and maybe even less, you know, and the because he knows how to do things. That's very much a pragmatist.
So yeah, well, isn't that great? And would you say, Tom, that the left of the left outdid itself to such a degree that they lost their center.
No question about it. And some of that is because he sort of forced them into it, I suppose, because he does push the envelope in terms of saying things. He's not afraid to say things that other people try to obscure in PR talk or, you know, newspeak, whatever, you know. That's one of the big problems is the left has been used to getting softball questions and defense and advocacy from major media. And so they're spoiled, you know, and they have just talked in those kind of terms. And then when they talk about Trump, they went crazy. And he, by showing them to be crazy, people said, "I don't like this, you know, I don't like this." And so I think it's really brilliant, I think. And now he's got a big challenge ahead of him, of course. So, which I hope he'll meet, and I think he will.
He's got a better team, it seems, around him, a more stable team at the moment. So let's hope that stability can keep going. But it's interesting to me, it's interesting in two ways. The media in New Zealand seems to have almost stopped in terms of reporting all the negatives that we, you know, basically can't have Trump. You know, Kamala's the woman to run the show. And, you know, Jaspreet and I have family in the States, and I know my family from California, they're sort of, they just couldn't vote for the guy, which really is weird because they're capitalists. And I sort of thought in their own private life, I thought, well, that's a bit weird. But what got me was the statistics that we have seen is that the young people, the 18 to 29-year-olds, voted for Trump. The 30 to 44-year-olds were neutral compared to previous. And the 45 to 65s voted pro-Trump. And the over 65s, I can't believe this, they shifted away from Trump. So the demographic was completely upside down to what I would have thought. I would have thought the young people, the new voters potentially would have gone for the left of center. But clearly they've woken up, as I might say.
Well, I think Trump is a disruptor. And I think people my age, and I certainly, I'm 73, so I fit into that older category. I think we tend to like, you know, stability. We don't like change probably as much as younger people. And it's hard to get people that are part of the baby boom generation, which I am, to get out of the thinking that they've had for, you know, decades. And I think, again, Trump is a disruptor. That's what he likes to do. He does it very well. At the same time, he's defending some very old-fashioned values too, and his style is such that a lot of people have difficulty with it. I don't personally, but I know people around me have issues with that from time to time. That his style is sometimes abrasive. But if you look at the man as a whole, if you look at the, you know, his history and what he's done with people. If you know anything about his family, and I do know a little bit about his family from close friends that are friends with him, or his family, I should say, he's a very kind man. He does a lot of stuff in the background, and he must spend, you know, 8 hours a day on the phone. I mean, he's constantly calling people, and they're people who you know, need his sympathy and so on. He's that kind of a person. He likes people, and so he engages with people. He's known to be a very funny man, you know, and that's one of the universal things that people talk who are close to him say. He's very funny, but he's also very serious. He's determined to get things done.
Well, the alternative media has had a field, isn't it? I'm looking at podcasts and others analyzing this. So this one headline did catch my attention, a victory for men and a loss for single cat women. And as a woman myself, I look at this, but there is a grain of truth in that. We've had feminism literally morph into something I can't even identify with myself because I thought I was a feminist, but not this modern day feminist, like the way they are. It is surreal what we've come to. It's been quite the pantomime, and I hope the dust settles and he's allowed to get on with the job. And there is others, because at the same time, there is headlines of other states, especially California, as mentioned, that governors of other states rush to Trump-proof their policies. Yeah. Would you have an opinion on that, Tom? What's going on now between now and January?
I don't think they'll be very successful in that. And let me point out, Megyn Kelly, and of course, he went after her in 2016 because she was asking him some questions that were a little over the top and pushing against them. And she came out and endorsed him, spoke at one of his rallies. And the point she made was, I'm tired of hearing that this man is an enemy of women. He's a protector of women. Because we're this whole transgender thing. And taking over women's sports. It's surreal. I mean, I don't know how else to describe it. It's surreal. And he's actually speaking out against it. And I can tell you that a lot of Republicans are afraid to speak out against it, which astounds me, but they are, because that's the safe thinking that a lot of politicians have. Well, let's not get out on the edge too much. We might get chopped off.
Let's just coast. Let's not take a stand on the And that's where I think the biggest problem has been in recent years. Most of us have decided it's easier to coast. Let's not rock the boat and just see where we've landed ourselves.
Well, capsulized the whole thing, I think.
Mm. Yeah, well, Jaspreet, you might recall that the leader of the two previous leaders of the political party that I was once in, both came out in recent years and were negative to Donald Trump. And we're supposedly on the right of the political spectrum in New Zealand. I just wonder what those two guys are saying today. I bet they have changed their tune to moderate, at least, because they were just too scared to be, in my opinion, caught up in the label of Trumpian style at the time. I'm talking 2017 and 2020. Yeah. So, I think people are scared. They're timid. They don't have the courage of their conviction when push comes to shove. And you don't get that with Trump. You actually know it's black or it's white.
And people may not like him, but they respect him. Remember, I'm sure both of you, since you're very savvy about all these things, remember that picture of Trump sitting at a table with the members of NATO. And he's laying out the facts to them, and they don't want to hear it. They don't want to hear it. You can tell, but they have to respect him because they know he's correct at the end of the day. And so, when we see the head of the EU, all of a sudden turning tail, less than a week, you know what's happening. She knows he has power, and she knows that it's happening throughout her area as well, her region, her continent.
And the markets are responding. You look at Bitcoin, you look at the stock market. Absolutely. As you mentioned at the beginning, EU is now ready to buy U.S. gas, not Russian gas. I'm sure there'll be a last few migrant caravans now wanting to rush across the borders before things change. The markets are going to respond. You don't have to like the guy. We get into identity politics too much. You don't have to. You have to identify with the policies. That's all.
And look what's happening in Europe. I mean, Macron was basically defeated in the last election, but he hasn't gone away. I don't know how that happens, but it's the crazy politics of France. And then you have Germany. Their government collapsed this week. And and you see in the UK with Tutir Starmer. Yeah, he's in deep trouble already. And, of course, going back to the issues that we're especially attuned to, energy. He appointed Ed Miliband, I think his name is, as a as his energy guy, energy czar, whatever you want to call him, and he's like the picture out of the dictionary for arrogance and condescension. You know, it's like, and he's imposing this Green New Deal on the UK, and it's just going terrible for them.
The hardship, the misery they are, when you have politicians inflicting that on their own people, one has to, at I guess, some point face the writing on the wall that this is what it is. Yeah. But for your state specifically, Thomas, what should change from now? What do you look forward to?
Well, let me just make a few comments about Pennsylvania. I think I might have mentioned this in one of our previous talks, but Pennsylvania is even though we're in the Northeast, we are not urban dominated as New York is, for example. In New York, it's just totally dominated by New York City. So things change, you know, sometimes never, or they change behind the scenes. But in Pennsylvania, you have a strong rural presence too, what we call the T, which is, you know, you have Pittsburgh on one side in the lower left-hand corner, Philadelphia in the lower right-hand corner, and then a T coming up above them with all these other counties. And of course, the rural counties spoke loudly, you know.
Yeah.
In our county, we had I think it was close to 70-30 for Trump. But the important thing was the turnout. The turnout was like 78% in our county. So, and we had one of the leading counties. I think we were number one, two, or three at various times of mail-in ballots, which none of us like. You know, we don't like mail-in ballots, but we knew we had to do it. And we did it, and so did our neighbor Pike County, and so did all of rural Pennsylvania, and it shocked them. But what are we looking for? I think, you know, in my case, I'm looking for getting the Delaware River Basin Commission, which you're probably not familiar with, but they're the only part that they control, the only part of Pennsylvania that has natural gas that can't develop it, which essentially means my county, Wayne County. So one of the things I'm hopeful for is that Trump will exercise leadership, appoint a federal representative to that commission who's a true leader, not a follower. And I think our governor, as liberal and leftist as he is, he's also a pragmatist to some extent. Not as much as I would like, but surprisingly so for a Northeast governor who clearly is leftist by personality. And he has not tried to shut down gas. He's taken, again, a softer approach. I don't care for him at all, but and I worry about him all the time. But he's not Kathy Hochul in New York. He's not Governor of California. He's far different, far different. And so I would hope that's one of the things that come out of this is that. And we're going to start getting some pipelines built too, which we desperately need in Pennsylvania, more pipelines. So Trump understands that issue. And I think he will be much more effective this time. I think he knows the scene. He knows who he can trust and who he can't. He knows that he didn't pick good personnel the first time around in many cases. He said that himself, that's one of his failings. He did not do a good enough job. So I don't think he's going to make that mistake again. He appointed a chief of staff, I think, that's going to lead him to hopefully make good choices on that and avoid bad choices. Maybe that's the better thing to do. But I believe that he's going to come into office. He's going to do a lot of things in the first week. I hope he fires the 30% of the FBI. That's what I'd like to see. And maybe 30% of the CIA, too. Regardless of whether that happens or not, you've certainly got to fire a lot of people. And I think Dan Bongino has a radio program, very popular radio program.
Yeah, he's the ex-Secret Service guy, isn't he?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. Very good. He's been saying for a long time, if Trump gets in, he should come in and fire 4,000 people the first day. And as they're screaming about it in the press, fire another 4,000 the next day, you know, and then the next day. And I think that's right. And I think that's maybe what he'll do. he's already put out a very strong statement on free speech, saying, you know, he's going to do something about it. And he's got Musk and Kennedy at his side on that. And those two are warriors on that issue. He's already said, or there's speculation, he's not said, but there's speculation among credible sources that he's going to launch a major campaign against child trafficking, which is a huge issue and a moral issue of the highest order. So I think he's going to come in and he's going to understand that he's really only got 2 years to do stuff. I mean, he's got to move quickly and hit hard. And yeah. I think he will do that. He's that kind of man.
Yeah, I've got a view that he has to do the real reset, not the great reset, WEF style. Yeah. He needs to do the real reset, which is back on track. And funnily enough, I find this funny, and perhaps you might not, but I think Joe Biden's privately having a chuckle about the failure of his heir apparent. I think he's thinking, thank goodness I'm not there in the future, and I haven't got to worry about the lame duck Democrat.
I think there's certainly signs that he was. Let's put it this way, very comfortable with her losing.
and just while we focus on the losing side of it, why do you think if she had picked your state governor as her running mate, it may have been different? Was that a major error?
Tim Walz was a terrible, terrible, I can't think of anybody worse, choice. But our governor, Shapiro, also has some issues. He's a much better talker. He doesn't do weird things like Tim Walz. But he would have offended a certain number of people, a significant number of people, because when pressed, he tends to get a little nasty. I think he'd have a harder time on the presidential level, vice presidential level, than he's had as governor. As governor, he's very comfortable moving in that whole arena. And it's a little bit like Ron DeSantis. You know, Ron DeSantis is one terrific governor of Florida, just a terrific governor, I mean, in every respect. But he couldn't pull it off on the federal level. He wasn't ready for prime time as president. He just wasn't. He didn't have the personality for it at that time. He hadn't adapted himself to that scene, okay? And he very much adapted himself to the Florida scene and does many things like Trump does. But when he got to the federal level, he didn't come across properly at all. I know he had a lot of supporters, but it was obvious he wasn't ready for prime time. And I think that would have been the case with Shapiro as well on the vice presidential level. That's just my opinion. But.
Yeah, so your Substack, Tom, is Energy, Security, and Freedom. So let's go to the security part of that for a moment, and perhaps the freedom. What do you think around, and I know this is a big question, around international security? We've got the war on Ukraine. We've got the Gaza issues, the Hezbollah issues. What do you think? And we've got Kim Jong-un on the sidelines as well. Yes. What do you think President Trump can do this time to sort of quell this angst, because none of us like war, none of us like international tension as real as it right. always is going to be.
Well, look, Putin, Vladimir Putin has already said he's willing to talk with Trump about Ukraine. So you know, none of this stuff would have happened that has happened had Trump been president, because again, he was respected. He may not have been liked by a lot of these people, but he was respected. And he wasn't afraid to talk to people. You know, the Democrats refuse to talk to Kim Jong-un. I can't even think of his last name. But anyway, the North Korean guy. He refused to talk to them. And they refused to talk to them. And he said, why not? He first of all called them Little Rocket Man first to set the stage, which was perfect. That's Trump to a core, you know. And so he sets the stage, and then he goes in and basically throws his arm around the little fella and says, let's work together. Yeah. And of course, it was beautiful. That's pure Trump. And And he'll do the same thing with Putin. Putin understands that that Trump is not to be fooled with, you know. And I think we told stories on that the last time we talked, so we don't need to do that again. But Putin understands Trump and understands he could do something very bad to Russia if he wanted to. And so, and that's true in the same thing with Iran. Iran now knows it's got a real enemy. It had a clear sailing with Biden, who got sucked into Obama's giveaways. And I don't know what Obama's agenda was. Clearly he didn't like America much, and he did like Iran. Why? I have no idea. But but the point is that they had free sailing with Biden and Obama, and with Trump they did not. They were broke, and then we sent them back money, and gave them everything they wanted on so many things. So they now know, and I don't think there's any doubt that Trump will reach out to the leaders of Iran, and he will tell them in no uncertain terms that they'll be dust if they don't work with him, and he'll then hold out his other hand and say, "Now work with me." So, I mean, that's who he is.
Yep. And this week we have the COP29, Conference of the Party 29, happening in Azerbaijan. And yes, I'm just hoping that President Trump's influence is already in play, because if it isn't, they're going to pledge hundreds of billions of dollars of American taxpayer money into another big pot. Let's hope. I feel for all taxpayers who are being seduced, having their money being taken or at least pledged into these climate pledges worldwide, including New Zealand. So what's your thinking there? Do you think the Biden bureaucrats will still try to put you under the bus on this stuff this week?
Well, apparently they're not participating much. That's what I read recently. They're not. And neither is Ursula. She's not participating either, which is very strange, isn't it?
Oh.
So I think that whole thing is coming apart. You remember last year when they had the fellow from one of the Mideast countries, I forget which one, but who was president, was leading the COP28, and he made some very pointed and correct statements about, you know, don't write off fossil fuels. That's not going to happen, you know. Yep. And now it's happened again. I don't know if you followed the latest news, came out, I think it was yesterday. I put a little post up on my site about it, that of course the BBC, which is total sign on to the climate nonsense, the BBC worked with some leftist outfit who went in to talk to the Azerbaijani leader, who's technically the leader of COP29, and talked to him about what he was planning, and he basically started out with the same message. Well, I'm very much a supporter of climate, but let's talk oil and gas. So,
I saw some of those. Yeah, that he is supporting fossil fuels. Yeah.
So the BBC thought this was a great thing. You know, oh my goodness, we've exposed the greenwasher. You know, blah blah blah. Which that's partly true, but the bigger point is that reality is sinking in, and these people are not carrying the day like they did, and I think we're seeing in England, we're seeing in Germany, we're seeing in various countries, I think even in Australia, we're seeing a lot of pushback regarding this whole climate thing. And I, when you have two leaders in a row of these COP events who are saying, hey, we can't drop oil and gas. I don't care what the head of the IEA says. I mean, he's obviously sold out to the grifters, but when you see this happening, you know that there's something coming apart, I think. That's my view.
Well, and you use in your Substack title, energy security, freedom. New Zealand has real problems, in my opinion, about energy security. We have put ourselves into a corner. We've closed down our only oil refining plant, so we're reliant heavily on imports. And we're trying to electrify the country at great cost. So... Yeah, and sure. Where we live, the province that Jasper Heath and I live in, is sitting on 2,000 years of low grade or brown coal that if you use the latest technology to turn it into diesel would power New Zealand for 2,000 years sort of thing. But we're not allowed to touch it. So we're the lockdown country at the moment. But we do have a change on, I think. So look, we need to let you go because you, I know you're on a timeline. So Tom, great to have you on. We hope that we can unlock, you unlock your country, we'll unlock ours. And we can talk about things more positively in the future. But we're grateful to have you on our show again. And just remind our listeners to go to your Substack, Energy Security Freedom at Substack.com. And you'll get lots of output from Tom J. Shipstone. Fantastic having you on, Tom.
It's great to have you guys interview me. I always enjoy our conversations because we obviously think alike, and it's so fascinating to me how the issues are very similar in your
worldwide
country. Yes. Very similar. So, but we're turning the corner. Now you've got to turn the corner. So,
absolutely. Thanks so much, Tom.
Thank you.
Good to see you.
From caps to tees and bags to bumper stickers, we have you covered. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/shop.